everyone. Welcome to Crime Cults and Coffee. I'm Bryn. And as a continuation of last week, I know I had mentioned I was going to talk about the something happy or something exciting, I should say, that had been going on. And as of right now, as of this episode being recorded, I still cannot really mention that because, again, it hasn't been made publicly known yet, but I promise I haven't forgotten. Some of you might be like, wait, I don't even know what she's talking about at this point, or I don't care. But I will be mentioning it for those who do give a crap about what I have to say, that I will talk about it as soon as I'm able to. I really have nothing else to discuss in regards to new or exciting things going on. I've been just overly exhausted with trying to get stuff done. And yeah, the exhaustion is real. But I will get into some recommendations. I have read two more books since last week. I read A Flicker in the Dark by Stacey Willingham, which I highly recommend. And even if you listen to it as an audiobook through Cloud Library, like I've been discussing over the past couple weeks, the version of that is awesome to listen to. The woman who tells it, you get completely sucked in. Sometimes I have a hard time listening to audiobooks depending on the speaker or how the story is being portrayed through voice as opposed to reading it, picturing the entire thing in your head through reading the words. But A Flicker in the Dark, I can say, was incredible to listen to, and it was just such a good book. And then I also read the book Last Breath by Karen Slaughter, who, shout out Karen Slaughter, I've said in so many episodes before, she is one of my all-time favorite authors. I've reposted her on Crime Cults and Coffee's page before. She has reposted Crime Cults and Coffee on her story, and she's just so amazing. She's such a good writer. I love her writing style, and all her thrillers just leave me hanging on the edge of my seat. But The Last Breath by Karen Slaughter is actually a prequel to The Good Daughter, and The Good Daughter is one of my all-time favorite books. So highly recommend The Good Daughter. If you haven't read it, make sure you read it. And Last Breath, it was a shorter read compared to The Good Daughter. At least I felt that way anyway. But it was really, really good and included some of the characters from The Good Daughter. In regards to podcasts, I am back on a kick with Dateline's Missing in America, which I know I've mentioned on this podcast before. And I've also been listening to True Crime Garage again. So shout out to those podcasts. And True Crime Garage, I've been a fan for a long time. Again, I've reposted them before. So if you haven't listened, make sure to check them out. I have not been watching any new shows, so I have nothing really to say there. So I think I will get right into this episode's coffee recipe. This episode, I'm going to be talking about how to make an iced pistachio latte. And it sounds so delicious. The recipe is from hummingbirdhigh.com. Just a heads up though, if you click the article link, make sure to scroll all the way to the bottom for a condensed version of the recipe. There's a bunch of explanations and alternatives, etc., for the majority of the article. So if you want to just get to the like meat and potatoes of the recipe, if you will, you're going to scroll towards the bottom of the article. This recipe calls for 1 tablespoon of pistachio cream, which I had read in this article that you can get pistachio cream in Costco if you have a Costco near you, or it is available to order off of Amazon. You need 1 cup of dairy or plant-based milk, but preferably they said 2% dairy milk if you want to get it close to like a Starbucks version. But for our dairy-free friends like me, maybe you want to go with an oat milk or almond, something on the nuttier side. You also want 1/2 cup of ice and 1 1-ounce shot of espresso. For the iced pistachio latte, first you're going to swirl the pistachio cream and scrape the pistachio cream into the bottom of a clear 12-ounce glass. Use a small rubber spatula or spoon to spread the cream across the bottom and sides of the glass. And then it says serve immediately. Pour the milk into the glass, add the ice, then pour the espresso on top. serve immediately with a straw. And that is that. It's pretty self-explanatory as long as you do have the pistachio cream on hand. I, for one, can't wait to try this recipe, especially since I have to look into the pistachio cream. I don't know if that's dairy-free, but if it is, I'm going to give it a go. And if it's not, maybe I can find an alternative version or just not put as much. And once my body will allow, I will be trying this one. So make sure, if, as always, if you give the coffee recipe a try, send pictures my way or let me know what you think. Give it a little bean rating like I do on the podcast. And I'd like to see more of those because I haven't seen some coffee recipe reviews in a while. So yeah, send those my way. From there, let's get into today's episode. So grab your coffee and have a morning with us. In this episode, I will be discussing the case of Kurt Sova. A little bit of background. He was born Kurt Eugene Sova on July 15th, 1964. He was 17 years old at the time of this story, and he lived in Newburg Heights, Ohio, in what was described as a quiet neighborhood. His mom's name is Dorothy, and his dad is Ken, and he's the youngest of four brothers. He was very family-oriented and was a high school student, and he was described as talented, very funny, fun-loving, athletic, a great student, and overall, a really good person in general. All the articles I read where family and friends were describing him, they just talked about what a genuine person he was and how he never caused any trouble. He never really made bad choices. He was always very respectful, very reliable. He was a great student, a great son, a great friend, just an overall amazing person. Friday, October 23rd, 1981, reportedly Kurt skipped school this day. He was said to have hung out near a local liquor store until someone eventually bought him a bottle of Everclear. He then began day drinking at a friend's house, and this was said to be extremely unusual and out of character behavior for Kurt. After hanging out at the friend's house, he then left to go to a carnival, but while on his way to this carnival, he ran into another friend that was going to a Halloween party. This friend's name was Samuel Carroll, aka Sam, and instead of going to the carnival, Kurt decided to go to the Halloween party with Sam. This party was at a duplex on Harvard Avenue, which was about 2 miles from Kurt and his family's home. According to Sam, this is what unfolded at the party. Kurt ended up getting extremely drunk and sick while there. At some point, he went outside with Sam to get some fresh air. Allegedly, Sam said he ended up going back inside to get their jackets because it was chilly out. And according to him, he was only inside the house for about 2 to 3 minutes. But when he came back out, Kurt was gone. According to Sam, Kurt had been standing by a fence when he left him. And some articles described him as kind of hanging over the fence. He then said he looked around for him briefly, meaning Sam looked around for Kurt briefly, but ended up figuring that Kurt had just gotten a ride home or something. He said that he assumed this because of the short amount of time that had passed. So in that, he was talking about the short time that had passed between going inside to get their jackets, coming back out, and Kurt being gone. October 24th, 1981, which was the next day, by the next morning, Kurt had still not returned home. His family immediately became concerned, as not only was the previous day's behavior very unlike him, but according to Dorothy, who again was his mom, quote, "It was not like him to be gone overnight. It was not like him to stay out after 10, 10:30 at the latest." And that was a quote from Uncovered. They called many of Kurt's friends, asking if anyone knew his whereabouts, and searched all over the neighborhood for him. October 25th, 1981, so this is 2 days since the party. Another day passed, and it was now Sunday. At this point, they knew that something was terribly wrong. Ken, his dad, and Dorothy decided to file a missing persons report with the local department, Newburg Heights Police. Sadly, for whatever reason, the family stated that Kurt's disappearance wasn't taken seriously, and little action was done to help them. A thorough investigation wasn't even done. I somewhat got the impression, like in other cases that have been covered, that an excuse of, oh, he's a teenager, he's almost an adult, because he was 17 years old. Oh, he's almost an adult, he went off on his own. Teens will be teens, or he can make his own choices kind of situation was probably what happened, but that's just me speculating because there wasn't really detailed information about why a thorough investigation wasn't done. The Sova family was not about to give up though, with or without help from their local department. They put up missing persons flyers. They continued searching everywhere for him. This included schoolyards, ravines, and even dumpsters. They decided to take matters into their own hands and began their own investigation. Dorothy went and talked to and questioned duplex residents where the party had taken place. Go, Dorothy. And according to reports, allegedly, they first denied even having a party. The person or people who were the resident or residents of the duplex also denied even seeing Kurt that night. After further investigation, a pizza delivery person confirmed that a party had in fact taken place there. And then after this came out, the story of the residents then changed and they admitted to the party and to Kurt being there. It's not delivery, it's detective work. And I want to know what pizza place this was because they deserve to have all the recognition alongside Kurt's parents, of course, for coming forward and helping them figure out that this party actually happened and Kurt was actually seen. So after the story of the resident or residents changed, the girl who threw the party ended up saying that more than a dozen people had come by the night of the party. Some were older and people that Kurt didn't know. And this girl also relayed to Dorothy that Kurt had been drinking a lot. The owner of a local shop also came forward with strange information pertaining to Kurt. Apparently, a random man had approached this shop owner after a missing persons flyer had been put up in the shop. The man said, quote, "The flyers weren't needed because Kurt would be found dead in a couple of days." And that was a quote from Uncovered. He also left flowers and a note at the storefront the following morning. The note read, quote, "Roses are red, the sky is blue, they found him dead, and they'll find you too." This man that had left this note and made these strange comments was questioned by police but cleared, and some articles stated that he made these remarks and did all of this due to mental illness, but it wasn't said for sure whether that was the reason he was cleared or the details behind how they could clear him. More strange info or helpful tips? One of Kurt's friends named David Trusnik also claimed that he had seen Kurt 3 days after he disappeared. Allegedly, he said Kurt and another boy were walking on a street that was less than a mile from Kurt's house. This is a quote from David regarding the incident. Quote, "I pulled over to offer Kurt a ride at this point, and a van pulled up and Kurt yelled out, 'Franco!' They both ran over to the van and they got in. I didn't know Kurt was missing. If I would have known he was missing, there would probably have been something I could have done. I could have followed the van, but I didn't know. And 2 days later, he was found dead. And that was the last time I saw him." And that was a quote from unsolved.com. Dorothy was also contacted by another resident of the duplex days after Kurt's disappearance. It was unclear whether this was a resident that was at the party or knew Kurt, or someone who lived in a separate part of the duplex. They told her that someone was sleeping on a cot in the duplex's basement. Thinking this could potentially be Kurt, Ken went to the duplex to check this out. Side note, according to articles, the police did not choose to investigate this potential lead. Ken said that there were signs that someone had been living down there, but that nothing pointed to it being Kurt in specific, and that whoever it was no longer there. October 28, 1981, this was 5 days after Kurt's disappearance. Three kids found a body in a ravine that was later confirmed to be Kurt Sova. The kids had been playing when they stumbled upon him, and this ravine was by a furniture warehouse and about 500 yards or 1,500 feet from the duplex. This ravine had reportedly been searched less than a day earlier. Kurt was found in shallow water. He was face up and barefoot. His left shoe was found nearby, wedged in a pile of rocks, but his right shoe has never been located. An autopsy was done on Kurt, and this was what was found. He died no more than a day and a half before his body was found, so between 24 to 36 hours before he was found. There were minor scrapes and bruises on his body, but no signs of trauma were indicated. He had a blood alcohol level of 0.11, and a cause of death could not be determined due to there being no signs of trauma and due to the fact that the blood alcohol level wasn't so high that it could have killed him. That couldn't have been the sole explanation for his death. The manner of death was said to be a quote-unquote probable accident. However, there was suspicion surrounding Kurt's death since the ravine had been searched. And also since they're saying that he died no more than a day and a half before he was found, that means he was alive somewhere for 3.5 days before he was found in this ravine. Where was he? Who brought him there? And or where was he in the time before he got there, if he brought himself there? So moving on to the aftermath, Kurt's story was featured on Unsolved Mysteries. In 2019, which was 38 years since Kurt was found, the Newburgh Heights Police Department reopened his case. Not only this, but they partnered up with criminology students from Tiffin University for a fresh look at evidence. 2020, Kurt's case was chosen for CrimeCon CrowdSolve, and in reference to CrowdSolve, CrimeCon.com states, quote, "Can hundreds of attendees with varied experiences and backgrounds work alongside the police and our world-class experts to help develop new ideas and leads in a cold case?" So basically, they're having amateur sleuths and or armchair detectives and or people who are invested in true crime podcasts working hand in hand with police and world-class experts on a specific case to see if they can get a new perspective and develop new ideas surrounding it. Great idea in some ways, maybe not in others, but through this CrowdSolve for Kurt, quote, "New ideas and some potential leads came forward." Aside from that, not much more was said about that, and it has now been almost 42 years since his death, and the case of Kurt Sova is still unsolved. If you have any information regarding the case or death of Kurt Sova, please contact Crime Stoppers of Cuyahoga County. And you can contact them at 216-252-7463. Or the Newburgh Heights Police Department, you can contact them at 216-641-2117. Or at police@newburgh-oh.gov. And as usual, that information will be provided on the Facebook page as well as in the show notes, which you can find in the description of this episode. Please, if you have any information, come forward with it. There has to be some people out there that maybe haven't spoken directly to the police or have remembered certain details or didn't get to speak those specific details when this case was going on, please, if you have any information, come forward with it. It's been, like I said, almost 42 years, and Kurt Sova and his family definitely deserve justice and answers for what happened to Kurt. So, because this was a shorter case episode, I do have a listener story to read for everyone. And as always, I did not read this email beforehand that was sent in, but it is from Nicole, who is a frequent listener story writer, probably the queen of listener stories on Crime, Cults, and Coffee. So here we go. Hi there. Here is that listener story I promised. Please feel free to mention I'm one of the people you called out because it genuinely made me laugh. All right, yes, I called Nicole out. She was one of the ones who promised me a listener story, and I said I'm holding her accountable. Yes, Nicole is one of those, but she is also a frequent flyer with us, so I can't be too upset with you, Nicole. If you've listened before, you'll know from the ages of 5 to 18, I grew up on a religious retreat center. At this point in my life, all I had ever known was this property. My whole world was this private bubble where I lived under the teachings of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. My quote-unquote school was a 5-minute walk from my home. My friends were ones I made from the passing church groups. My only ventures off this property were to the grocery store and occasional trips with the school or church civic group. The only way to describe this group is like a combination of Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, with a heavy emphasis on survival for the end of the world. Their Bible says when humanity falls, we will be left awaiting the return of Jesus Christ and living off the land. As a result, we learned everything from archery, trapping, fire building, winter survival, and would go on camping trips to put our skills to the test. At one of these camping trips, the unexplainable happened. Oh my gosh, Nicole, I have chills already. Night had fallen, the campfire slowly dying down, and many of the adults asleep in their tents. The few awake were the kids who decided to play manhunt. Oh my god, manhunt, my childhood. The only sounds were the occasional screams of laughter, the chirping of the crickets, and wind rustling the leaves, a perfectly peaceful night. I was lying next to one of the tents, hiding, but also stargazing, hoping to spot a falling star to make a wish, and charting the constellations. Eventually, I was discovered and chased by the opposing team. Running until my lungs felt like they were going to burst, I was halted in my tracks. It felt like the world stopped the moment I did. Up in the sky was a green light, almost as if someone was holding a giant flashlight, only I could not see its source. Hovering in the air frozen, like the rest of the world, it sat for what felt like a lifetime. I looked to the person chasing me to see if they saw it too, and he looked like I felt, a mix of awe and terror. Eventually, a few more of us spotted the light, and panicked kids gathered to look up at the unknown. In silence, we stared, our trance only broken when the light shot out of sight faster than anything I've ever seen. As if someone had turned on a stereo with the volume full blast, the sound returned full force. The peaceful night almost too loud, as we didn't notice the ambiance gone to begin with. Recounting the story to the adults was quickly dismissed, as aliens are not real in the eyes of the Lord. Eventually, only the few witnesses had an unspoken agreement. We were not crazy, and what we saw really did happen. Wow. Well, I can vouch. I have also seen a green light, and it's described as like a green fireball if you look it up. I don't know if that was the same thing you saw, but I saw a very similar thing, but it wasn't hovering for as long as you said, although it was moving like a slow motion shooting star almost, but it was way bigger than a shooting star, and it was also green. So I wonder if we saw the same thing or if it was just very similar. But what you saw is so crazy, because anyone who's listened to this podcast and has heard me talk about UFO episodes and heard the descriptions of things that are common to happen to most people during UFO encounters or alien sightings or whatnot, it's the sound being completely gone and there being no background noise whatsoever. And then all of a sudden, once this UFO or whatever leaves, the sound returning like full blast. And that is so insane. Like, I could picture exactly what you heard and saw, even though I've never had the experience of this sound going away like that. Thank you so much for writing this in, Nicole. I'm so glad not only did I hold you accountable, but you held yourself accountable, because I love that you wrote this story in, and the way you told it was just so, I could visualize the whole thing. It was incredible. And yeah, send more, please. One of the things I really loved that you mentioned and how you explained it was the comparison of someone turning on the stereo with the volume full blast. All of a sudden, the sound just coming back. That's terrifying, but in the same token, it's really insane that that experience can happen to people and does happen to people. And wow, what more can we say here on Crime Cults and Coffee besides aliens are real people, aliens exist, or some other life force, whether you want to call it or depict it as an alien or not. There is unidentified life out there. It cannot just be us. It can't be. Anyway, enough rambling and into the spiel. You can find Crime Cults and Coffee on Instagram. That's where I post pictures of the coffee reviewed and any past coffees, past episodes, important information, any information regarding the merch or listener reposts from the stories on Instagram you can find in the highlights. The link tree in the bio has most of the listening platforms that this podcast is on. If you go to Facebook at Crime Cults and Coffee, that's where I put any resources, photos, links, calls to action. And any calls to action can also always be found in the episode show notes. If you have a listener story or a case suggestion, you can email me at crimecultsandcoffee@gmail.com or DM me on Instagram at crimecultsandcoffee. As always, I appreciate the listener stories and case suggestions so much. And also, I want to give a big shout out to listener Kat for sending me listener art recently. I love it so much, and I'm going to definitely post a picture of all the art she sent on our Instagram page. Last but not least, if you enjoy the podcast, not only can you recommend it to friends and family, but you can leave a rate and review on listening platforms that will allow you to do so, such as Anchor, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. I will send you free stickers. And if you don't have that option on any listening platform of your choice, you can like, you can follow, you could subscribe, and that will let you know when new episodes come out each week. Aside from that, I know I had said in the beginning of the episode that I couldn't talk about the something exciting yet, but I hadn't recorded the spiel part of this episode yet when I had said that. So, surprise, I actually can, because it has since been announced. My new nephew was born on July 26th. And congratulations to my brother Casey and sister-in-law Sarah on their beautiful baby boy. I am so excited to have another little baby. And he is my first nephew, so along with my cute little nieces, I now have a nephew to love and enjoy. And that about sums it up for this week's episode. Everyone, I hope you have a good weekend, and if you're not listening on the weekend, a good week, and until next week. Bye. more information regarding this case and our resources,
follow us at Crime Cults and Coffee on Instagram and Facebook.